Boys, are you familiar with the concept of a shit sandwich?
Vaguely. Isn't that just like something that's shit?
It's a metaphor, let's be fair. <with them. laughs>
I thought you were offering us tea, Claire.
Oh, God, no. So it's a sort of managerial leadership technique in which you something really bad with two nice things. So if you're in a football team, you might be like, guys, great passing, love the passing, need to stop scoring own goals, that's not ideal. But I thought that the cheer at the beginning of the match was fantastic. Now, it would be really nice if we could structure this week's pod as a shit sandwich, because boy, do we have some rants to get in. But I thought the three interviews that you have gone away and done since the World Championships are so good. It would be really nice end with them as like a trio of positivity. So we're going to make instead kind of a shit bruschetta, a bruschetta, if you will. We're going to start with the foundation of this podcast, which is a rant, and then we're going to get into the good stuff.
Okay, that's cool. We're down for it.
Fantastic. So bring on the bruschetta.
Classy.
That's what we get. That's what Claire's for, isn't it? Yeah, to bring the class.
By the way, welcome along. This is the Backstroke Boys and Girl Athletics podcast, where we talk in a reverent, fun, error-strewn way about the world of track, field, road and cross-country. I'm Claire.
I'm Jodie.
And I'm Bayo.
Hi, I'm Dalila Mohammed, and you're listening to the Backstroke Boys.
The Diamond League's changing.
Great.
What do you think?
I mean, number one, they just announced it, right? That makes no sense whatsoever. The idea that they've actually asked anybody in Switzerland for their
and Belgium, Jodie.
Ah, that's all right then. For their decisions, for their opinions, is just totally made up. I mean, maybe there possibly was some couple of people outside of Zurich asking with a clipboard.
Yeah.
But like they were going to take any notice of what fans thought or journalists or anyone else. They'd already decided what they were going to do.
Of course.
And the decision itself, I have some sympathy with.
Oh, I have lots of sympathy with,
as always, with the IWF, the way they've done it and the results are absolute nonsense.
So just to quickly look back at what it is for those of you who are living underneath a rock and have missed it, the Diamond League next year is going to be 14 meets, 14 meets and then a final. And from those meets have been hewn for athletics events, and those are the triple jump, the steeplechase, the 200 metres and the discus throw, which will be contested across the year but in a very limited capacity, and they won't contribute towards overall Diamond League standings.
It feels just like, what's that saying? Rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. Yeah, it's like the what they've done is so kind of, it feels really minor, as well as being really kind of frustrating at the same time. Mm. I mean, I can't believe that anybody is going to go, yes, the triple jump's no longer on, I'm going to go to that Diamond League. Yeah. How are you saving any time? Or you're just pissing off people, and you're also, most importantly, I think, pissing off some of the most successful,
marketable,
popular people in athletics. Why would you not want Christian Taylor at your Diamond League?
Or Julia Rojas,
exactly.
Catherine Bargwin.
Or Noah Lyles.
Or Sandra Perkovic.
Yeah, it's
what
just
else is there not there?
Daniel Stahl isn't in it. Oh, and then the steeplechase.
Which is
gone.
One, I mean, I'm not that bothered about the steeplechase, but it's one of the most entertaining events going.
Yeah.
Like, every time someone loses a shoe or someone gets beaten in a straight finish, the
or
women's
someone fails to run men a hurdle.
Or the hurdles are the wrong height.
Yes, exactly. all the good stuff.
So, like, it's just so arbitrary. Mm. And the fact that Christian Taylor can't earn a living on the Diamond League next year. I mean, what the fuck's that?
Well, SEBCO has said that they're going to work very closely with athletes in those events now. Make of this what you will, to through the Continental Tour, which is going to be announced later this month, which is a series of high-profile one-day events. They're going to attempt to take those four events, which have been so very sidelined, and work closely with the athletes to grow the profile of the athletes themselves and the events. It's very much a plaster over a gunshot wound.
So do we need? Mm. Another load of athletics events that we can't follow.
But also, if you're going to do that, get them together and announce it in one go. This is the problem, and it's over and over and over again. You shoot yourself in the foot. Do not introduce this new policy. Everyone's up in arms about it, and then in a month or so time, tell us what the solution to it is. And then we'll go, oh, okay, that maybe makes more sense.
And which looks like an afterthought.
It looks like an afterthought, but maybe it will be a clear-cut policy. And we'll go, oh, okay, that sounds quite good. Instead, you're now going to have, like, this big uproar, as you've had in the last week, people complaining about it. And then when it comes around again, as you say, it will look like an afterthought. Why not just combine them both and announce it in the new year so we all understand what's going on?
It also sounded as though the athletes themselves were completely unaware.
Of course they were.
When were they ever not?
Which is just deeply, deeply unfair. If you wake up to your Twitter timeline blowing up and you learn that your event has been culled from the Diamond League. I also wanted to make the point that it's an Olympic year.
Yeah.
Why would you be doing anything but flooding people's timelines, their platforms, their televisions, their, you know, their radios with fantastic high quality athletics? We've said it time and time again, what athletics needs is a really cohesive and well-marketed Premier League, which is what the Diamond League has the capacity to be. If you're taking events out of it, it suggests that you have no confidence in the sport of athletics itself. It's making it more complicated because now people are going to watch the Olympics having never seen a 200 metre runner in action all season long, or having not watched a triple jump all year. So they have no idea who Christian Taylor is or Will Clay is.
But also, if we've now got 14 Diamond Leagues, right?
Didn't they say they were going to make condense it? Haven't they added an extra one?
Yes, but they've got a new sponsor, Wanda Sports, which is the largest sponsorship apparently in athletics history. And what the meeting.
I'd love to see the asterisk at the bottom of that statement. Yes.
What does Wanda Sports do?
We don't know.
I have no idea. And who is Wanda? but apparently, all the meetings have improved over the 2019 season.
Of course, they have.
They've decided.
What
to
does
not
that mean?
Cut the program as much.
What do you mean they've all improved? Improved what?
As all the press release says.
They've all improved. Means nothing.
It's obviously something that the guy with the clipboard found outside the Swiss stadium.
But listen, if they've now got 14 meetings. Why don't we... You could still have the same amount of events, but only put them on at 8, or whatever the maths is. You could still... Why are we losing 4 events? Why can't you have the same amount of events, but just don't have them all at every meeting?
That's a really
which
good
we don't
point.
Anyway. We don't... Don't they all... Aren't they all... Isn't there like 8... Every meeting doesn't have all 24 events or whatever it was, does it?
Definitely don't.
So there must be a way of making that work. My one sympathy is that it's only since the I'm not even sure it's all of the time there's been the Diamond League that we've had all these events. It used to be different events, different
years.
And it would swap between the 100 and the 200.
Yeah.
And I think I've got some sympathy for that.
Totally
because
100%.
Trying to pack all these events in is difficult. I totally understand the idea of packaging something for TV so it's only over 2 hours or whatever.
Well, I'm going to come to that in a second.
But I understand it as a concept. Why you couldn't have events before and after the TV highlight, I don't know.
Maybe you will. I mean, maybe we'll have to wait and see.
They've offered that to meets. They can put events on outside the TV schedule.
Diamond League events?
No, but that's the problem.
That's my point. Why couldn't you have the 5,000 on before and... I'm advocating it, because I want to watch the 5,000. I want to watch the 10,000. But you could do that and show highlights within the package. Whatever, there's ways around this. And they've just gone for the most unhelpful... I don't know who comes up with these ideas and why they think they're good.
The thing is, someone somewhere has focus grouped this to death. And
do you think so?
No, hang on. They've focus grouped it to death, but what they've done is they've had something in mind and they've made sure they get... You know when you make sure that the evidence like heads in the red direction you want it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they've kind of come up with these ideas. They've asked people around and they've just happened to get the results they wanted.
Yeah.
My major issue is 90 minutes. It's 90 minutes. Am I making that up?
It's 90 minutes.
90
now.
Minutes.
What? That's come from TV then.
But who wants to go to something and have less of it?
That makes no sense. But surely the meeting can run longer, but that's for TV. So there must be a hardcore of 90 minutes in the middle that you stuff all your events
in. What they have produced, I think, in their eyes, is a really high quality over quantity.
Yeah.
90 minute athletics, jam packed, kind of straight from one event to the other. Program of athletics which showcases the best that the sport has to offer. We might not agree with that, but that is what the advisory board, which was all of the meet
gotta know that she's doing air quotes.
That's what they've come up with. I mean, is there anything on this press release that we haven't really touched upon? I think what they really truly believe is that they have distilled athletics down to the best of, and that it becomes a highlights package of a meet rather than a meet from which you would require a highlights package.
Yeah,
fair enough. I've got two issues. Number one, 90 minutes of athletics, yes, it's jam-packed, but you don't have any time...
To breathe.
No. You have no time to enjoy what's just happened and you've on to something else. And that's why we get so confused about what's happened at each meeting, because they're all the same.
I guarantee what will also happen is we won't get results...
No.
They'll be on to the next thing and we will never get finally... Because we don't at the moment. We get that in the bottom left hand of the screen, we get that little bit thing that you only get the top three and then it disappears and never comes back. If we're then rushing off to the next thing, I guarantee you we will not get every result that we want.
And then you're having to troll Twitter for the results and it just stops you actually being able to enjoy the thing.
Claire, have you got the IWS idea of what the favourite athletics events according to a poll in Sweden?
I actually do.
It's hilarious.
So the top three most popular disciplines in the Diamond League are the event that we voted was the least exciting of the World Championships, the 100 metres, the long jump. the high jump, which has been won by one woman for the last 3 years.
And the men's high jump has been won by one different man every time. Unless they did that outside of the Doha Stadium after Barshim won, nobody said the high jump. And I'm sorry, nobody said the long jump over the triple jump. No. Nobody did.
This is what's mind-blowing. Followed by the pole vault, fine. Fair,
yeah,
great,
absolutely.
Great. The 200 metres, which they have cut. And the 400 metres, which until Karani James made his comeback this year, over the last few years, and until NASA produced that absolutely eye-watering thing, we never saw the women go head-to-head in a really good 400 metres. And that's one of the criteria for selecting an event was a good head-to-head competition.
I don't believe that no one said the 1500.
No.
It's just not true.
No. Also, what people are saying, they might be saying their favourite event. Okay, so it might be true people like the 100. People don't like the 100 this year particularly.
Very good point.
You know? So I, in theory, am a big fan of, say, the women's 800. Women's 800 this year, now that Castor wasn't really there, was a bit of a damp squib in my eyes.
Until Doha,
of course. Yeah. but I'm just saying that, like, because you love an event, that doesn't mean that at the moment that is the best event that showcases our sport.
It also doesn't mean you don't want to watch other events. No. Like,
but people say they love the 100 metres because for the last 10 years they had Usain Bolt and they love watching the 100 metres. Mm. People traditionally love watching the 100 metres. Next year, there is no evidence that 100 metres is going to be
I bet if you'd ask them who's your favourite 100 metre runners, they'd all say Usain Bolt.
Yes.
And also they have all, following on from the Usain Bolt thing, who are they trumpeting as the next Usain Bolt at the moment, because they pick a different one every 6 months, but right now it's Noah Lyles. Mm-hmm. So why not get rid of his event? It's just as the 200 metres gets good now that DeGrasse is back from Snell again. Also, really notable absentees on the list of the countries that they surveyed. So they were able to speak to people in Switzerland and Belgium, but they didn't speak to Kenya and Ethiopia and Uganda, which, so no wonder the 5 and the 10
or South Africa or Nigeria or anywhere in Africa.
So South Africa they did actually speak to, but they're not going to be voting for the 5 and the 10.
No, did no one take the lesson? And we talked about this a lot, and I talk about it in some of the interviews that are coming up. Did no one take the lesson of what we saw at the World Championships?
Yeah.
About, like, aiming the audience. It should not just be completely Euro-American centric. Mm-hmm. If you want to grow the sport, which presumably they did quite a good job of in Doha, you cannot grow the sport by going back to the same old events that have been like over and over all these years. I mean, the middle distances are extremely popular events. You know,
incredibly.
We've got this thing now where they've cut out any like long distances. They basically said long distances are gone from a Diamond League. Why you can't, or you can, we've seen it over and over again, have a 5,000 metres and cut back to field events.
Yeah.
And 3,000 metres...
Then they'd have to show field events.
Yes, exactly. That's my point. but they put the 3,000 metres in there. And 3,000 metres isn't an event.
Who runs the
It's not an event.
Meters? I know, it's balmy. I spoke to Radzi about it this week, and one thing that he pointed out, which was a very good point, is that if you were a meet director now, a non-Diamond League meet director, you would offer one hell of a bonus for a triple jump world record, wouldn't you? Or a fantastic 200 metres performance, or one of these events that have been culled. And then actually Emily Moyes, an athlete on Twitter, tweeted Highgate and I to the 10K PBs and said, guys, can you become a rival to the Diamond League? Can you put on the distance events that we are now going to miss so badly?
Maybe TV doesn't like a distance event, but of all the actual events in athletics, distance events are the ones with the most people competing in them, the most fans. If you go to America, all the talk in America is around distance events.
Yeah.
So the idea that people aren't interested in it, everyone can understand a distance event because everyone goes jogging, everyone runs a park run, everyone runs a half marathon. The idea that you can't promote these events. I had a big row with someone on Twitter over the summer about how no one wants to watch a 10K. And I put...
Wrong.
I put posts of like Ingrid Christensen and Hayley Gebrselassie. Yeah, that was 30 years ago. No one's interested in them anymore.
Everyone.
Oh, that's when we had a whole hour of like TV of Mo running on a track after he won his gold medal.
I was in Dublin the day that Eliud Kipchoge broke 2 hours for the marathon, and I was in a hotel in the middle of Dublin, and which I wouldn't even think of as a particularly athletic-y city. Maybe I'm wrong, but every single person at breakfast was glued to their phones watching Kipchoge run, and then the excitement when he did it. People were punching the air around the buffet, cheering. Everyone was just universally engrossed by this one man's Herculean achievement and discussing how exciting distance running was.
We haven't discussed that, have we?
No.
I don't think we discussed it.
We've not touched on it,
have
we?
No, we have. We haven't been together.
I watched the last 2 minutes by accident because I woke up and just remembered it was on vaguely, and my timing was great. Listen, you can't knock him. I think he's great. I think the whole thing was great. Doesn't really interest me because it's not a proper marathon, but
It's a feat,
isn't it? Yeah. It's a feat, and it's something that should be celebrated and applauded. But I don't think it's really an athletics achievement. Yeah. If I'm being kind of grumpy old manly about it.
Afterwards, when he crossed the line, people were like, "They put a man on the moon," and it's like, "Yeah, not really the same." But brilliant, nonetheless.
Remains one of the nicest men in sport.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And also Bridget Kosko then the next day, which was even the bigger shocker, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We will have to chat about that at some point, 100%. So Diamond League reforms aren't really floating our boats.
No. I'm just going to say... there's a lot of stuff people on Twitter complaining and saying like, oh, you know, Sebco or the IWF, they don't care about the sport. I don't believe that for one moment. I wholeheartedly think that Sebco passionately cares about the sport, as do all the other, not everyone maybe, I'm sure there are people up in the IWF who don't really.
The IWF don't know what the sport is.
Yeah, exactly. I'd have no doubt that Sebco is doing what he thinks is the best. Maybe we don't understand it, maybe over time it will make more sense. I have no doubt that it's well-meaning. I just think that it's what you said earlier. I don't think it shows a lot of confidence in your own sport if you're actually cutting events rather than finding ways to promote them.
Oh, it makes sense. I like
exactly.
It. Clever. Clever. I like it. Right, okay. Anyway, my name's Ben Williams, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
From one Twitter furore to another, the New York Times last week, released a video documentary article about Mary Kane, who we have talked about on this pod before as one of the many US stars who just disappear without trace. We now know where Mary Kane has been, and that has been recovering from 5 broken bones, 3 years without a period, and a long period of suicidal thoughts and self-harming, thanks to a stint at the Nike Oregon Project, which sounded from the piece entirely abusive. Mm. You've, I imagine, watched the piece. What did you think?
I haven't watched it. I read articles about it. Mary Kane is one of the we've interviewed her and when she was very young and so fun and friendly and confident and articulate. She was a brilliant, brilliant person to interview, and obviously a great athlete at such a young age. And there is a history of young, especially female athletes and especially distance runners, who do a great at a young age and disappear off the face of the earth. And she's another casualty of that. And this time, we find out why. There's lots of reasons, obviously, but this, you're right, Claire, just totally abusive, and that the whole setup there that's funded by Nike, which is supposed to be to promote athletics, well, actually, it's just to sell gear, but the corruption and the just everything there is just absolutely disgusting, and the idea that a young girl who has run 4:04 for when she was 16 or 17 for the 1500 meters. Needs to lose weight in order... Even the idea that she has to improve is ridiculous. Like, she's 16, 17. Let her enjoy what she's doing. Mm. She'll naturally get better. She'll learn. She'll get stronger. She'll get more tactically aware. She'll be able to do more training. This bullying of someone because you want results right now from a 17-year-old is just disgusting.
Kane was set an arbitrary weight target and was weighed regularly in front of her teammates, given diuretics and publicly shamed if not hitting it. And she's not alone. What has been really, I think, powerful about this is how many other women now feel empowered, particularly women, but I'm sure it also is a factor with men's athletes as well. We just haven't heard so much about them. But they're all speaking out, and we've heard things like Kara Gucci was at the Nike Project, the Oregon Project rather, and she used to have to eat protein bars in her bedroom at night because assistant coaches were cooking her meals and she was going to bed hungry. She was unwrapping them as quietly as she could because she was scared of being heard.
But how can you do distance training when you're hungry?
Absolutely insane.
Now, I did watch the video, and it's actually really distressing. Because we first interviewed Mary Kane in 2013, I think. She was at the World Championships in Moscow, would that be right? And she was so bubbly, so friendly, so chatty. Mm. Couldn't quite believe she was there. You know, it was just like, it was all so exciting
and
to her.
And got to the final.
Got to the final, and, you know, it was all this big adventure to her. And then we've interviewed her a couple of times since, but like nothing recently, obviously. And then to watch, 6 years later, that being the same girl... The one we spoke to back in her, like, the heyday, you know, is actually really distressing. The thing that really struck me was two things. Firstly, she said that she got called up by Alberto Salazar. Now, we've always thought there was something dodgy going on there, be it drugs, be it abusive, whatever it was. I've never felt comfortable about that whole setup. So when British athletes have gone there, I've never felt comfortable about that.
Mm.
when she talks and she said that she gets a call from the biggest training group in the world,
yeah.
and like it's really exciting, so she goes. Of course you go, why wouldn't yeah. you? But she got there and it soon became apparent that everyone in charge was a man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, and I do not, I'm not in any way blaming her parents for this at all. I'm not, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you get there and you notice everyone there is a man is not, should not be in charge of the day-to-day training, not any man, but like certainly the whole team of men should not be in charge of the day-to-day training or just welfare of a 16 or 17-year-old girl. That's just unacceptable. And I do think it's something that wouldn't happen now. We're not that far on from there, but I think definitely in the last 2 years or so, there's been a lot more focus on these kind of things. And I think it's something that will be broached a lot quicker nowadays, or probably wouldn't be in the place in the first place.
I think that's...
Sorry, just quickly. Mm. The other thing was, I thought was really, really heartening, is the minute her parents found out about it, they said, get home.
Yeah,
that was it. There wasn't like, oh, what's going on? There wasn't like any concern about like her career or anything. They were literally get on a plane. They sent her a plane ticket and she left.
Well, that's good because a lot of parents don't act like that.
Exactly, so that's what I mean.
Brilliant. I think the other thing...
Sorry, can I just quickly say, it was really, really, really noted when... There was a bit, I don't know what which meeting it was, but she'd run and she hadn't run well, and she was being shouted at by Alberto Salazar
in the rain,
in front of people, in the tent, surrounded by like the whole team there from Nike. And I thought, a woman wouldn't have stood for that. Do you know what I mean? If there'd been any women in that team, they probably would have stepped in or like said something. But it's a cult.
Yeah.
It's a cult. That's the problem with the Oregon Project. That's the problem with Alberto Salazar. It's a cult. You could see that from, what's his name at the World Championships?
Oh,
with
Engels.
Engels. Just his nonsensical argument about why everything was okay. Because he could not get it put in, out of his head, that he couldn't get it into his head that there may be something wrong. It's a cult, and there's a kind of a brainwashing going on there. And if you can sit and see a young, vulnerable girl being shouted at by an old man, you know, who's in charge of her and not do anything about it, that's really, really like distasteful.
It's a cult, but not one that exists in a vacuum. And whilst the Oregon Project is being shut down, and rightfully so, and unfortunately will probably resurface under a different name somewhere
else. Of course it will.
But it's not just an Oregon Project problem. It's not just a Nike problem. It's an athletics problem. We've seen Bobby Clay in the UK over the last few years develop osteoporosis because she felt so pressurised to stay slim. We've had so many athletes speaking out from other training groups within Nike, and I'm sure there are athletes who will soon be speaking out in turn, who are sponsored by New Balance, who are sponsored by Adidas, who are in other training camps all over the world. There's such an unhealthy issue within athletics about the size that women need to be.
I don't think it's fair to say athletics. I think it's sport in general. You think athletes are treated any worse than gymnasts?
No, but I was going to say, have you watched gymnastics recently? The girls are so much bigger.
Yeah,
well, so much bigger.
That's because it's not about artistry anymore. It's all about strength.
No, absolutely.
So that's actually a girl called Katie Tuohy, the girl who won the NCAAs, and she was speaking out about how she stopped because of the pressure to look skinny.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons that she stopped.
Yeah, but gymnastics is a different sport than it was 10 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. But they put things in place to ensure that, not just the scoring, but also there is a lot more focus on like making sure...
But the one other thing, another problem this has highlighted is the lack of women coaches.
Yes.
Which is a problem across all sports, but I think specifically in athletics, because athletics is a sport that is 50-50, men and women. So there has to be a real push of getting women involved in coaching. So a lot of British ex-female athletes are getting into coaching. Jenny Meadows, Kelly Southerton is, Helen Clitheroe has, and there's others, and I think that's a really good move.
So what is it that we need to do then as a sport, moving forwards? I mean, I scribbled some things down. We need more conversation around this. Great, that started. Mary Kane has started a ball rolling. Other people have tried to start it rolling, but we need to maintain that momentum. We need safe places that athletes can turn to. Rugby in this country has just introduced an anonymous helpline for athletes, and it has been inundated with rugby players who are struggling with mental health issues, with emotional fallout from retiring, with all sorts of issues that simply you couldn't go to anyone about in the past. So maybe something like that could be put in place. I think we need organisations to react to this. I'd love to hear the IAAF's thoughts on it. I'd love to hear what they're going to do to prevent this becoming even more of a problem or to wipe out the problem altogether. We need more media outlets digging into it, and we need acknowledgement that this isn't just the Oregon Project.
I would suggest we don't give creepy old men millions of pounds to take young girls up into the mountains.
I mean, you're not wrong. So that's the more female coaches, and then also more members of staff. Something that Kane said, you're right, she arrived and she realised there were no female coaches there. She also realised that no one there was a certified psychologist or nutritionist. They were all just Salazar's friends. So she would go to them with a problem and they'd go, oh, just deal with Alberto.
But that's what I mean. So I was being a bit sort of facetious when I just said that about up in the mountains. But that wasn't a
Jodie's picking at me. because it was so focused on him and what he said and did, he was like a god. Like, you would think that someone up there from Nike would have said, "Hold on, you can't be doing this properly without a proper."
The idea that there's no nutritionists. I mean, what happened?
Astonishing, isn't it, with the money that group had behind them.
But like, British athletes have no nutritionists sometimes because they haven't got funding, and it's one of the main complaints.
I think the point was there were people who would have been there in a role, but I don't think they were like his mates or whatever. You know, people he brought in, as opposed to like employing the best person for the job.
Anyway, when the whole thing's... But also, where's the Federation in this? Why is not the Federation going... How's it going, Mary? Why obviously, your results have gone down this year compared to last year.
Who's funding the Federation?
Nike.
Very, very good point. So, plenty of reforms, hopefully, to come off the back of this, or at least a conversation that doesn't just fizzle out.
But how brilliant that she's come forward.
Absolutely.
It must be said, and so much has changed in the last couple of years, but the very fact that she can come forward and she can get so much support, that is a huge, huge change. The stigma has gone away from someone stepping forward and putting their head sort of above the parapet in a way that people would have been before, like, torn down because of it. Now, you're kind of lifted up for doing so, you know? And I think that is going to be a huge change, especially as... Kids, young people, they understand social media way better than the IEEE for anyone does, don't they? So if you want to like have your say and you want to get it out there, there's a way of doing that just wasn't there before.
She's back running and she's coaching in New York. And I just hope she's happy and she does what she wants to do. Yeah. But I'd love to see her back on the track.
Yeah. Oh, well done. Thank you, Mary.
Hi, I'm Holly Bradshaw and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
That's the bread laid. Shit sandwich, bruschetta, whatever you want to call it. Let's get on to the lovely, fruity, tasty, exciting toppings, which is the fact that you two have been out journalising.
Journalising!
Woo! Everyone's favourite nicest verb. And spoken to three of...
Sorry, I'm going to have to argue with you there. It's now a verb, and I heard it's going to be going in the Oxford English Dictionary.
When it's in very the OED, I will eat my words there.
You'll eat your shit sandwich.
God, no, please, no. Tell me what you two got up to.
So we just thought coming off the World Championships was something we really enjoyed.
Yes, we did.
And there was a lot of really good British performances. Obviously, Dina and Kat got all the plaudits, but there was people who didn't necessarily win medals, but did really well, who we were really excited about.
And also just had stories that we wanted to hear about. Yeah. You know, you come out of a championship and you're like, oh, what was that about? Or how did that happen? So we just basically called up the people we wanted to speak to.
So one of our favourite people on the pod.
Oh, friend of the pod.
And also one of the British athletes who did the best at the championships was Tom Bosworth.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for having me on, you're right.
I'm very good. Thanks for calling us all the way from Australia. How's the weather out there?
Yeah, no problem. Oh, it's fantastic. In fact, it's seriously hot. But, you know, I loved Commonwealth out here in Brisbane. So I thought I'd come back and put a good winter's block in.
I'm not jealous at all at the hot weather, but it is good, obviously, to be out there training in some heat and getting some practice in, because obviously after Doha, we know what heat can do to everyone at a championships.
Yeah, exactly. And well, you know, we've got a year worth of heat prep in already, so it shouldn't be too much of a shock being out here, or it's just kind of continuing the work we've done, and we've got a plan for next year too.
Amazing. So listen, let's just have a quick chat about your championship record over the last few years. You came sixth at the Olympics, seventh at the European Championships, and seven once again at the World Championships. That's a pretty commendable championship record.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm dead proud. Like, obviously at all the majors I've now kind of top eight, like the equivalent of being a finalist at every championships. And I know it's always, everyone talks about medals, but you know, not everybody can always win a medal. Three people can, and so that's something I'm very proud of, and hopefully now I can add some medals to that.
And I forgot, second at the Commonwealth Games as well.
Whoop whoop.
So there are some medals. You have proved over the past few years that obviously you've got a great championship record, but also that you can compete in the hot weather. I mean, Rio was really hot, Commonwealth Games was really hot, but Doha was a different level. Just tell us about those conditions in Doha.
Yeah, Doha was absolutely insane. Like, I can't actually really explain it, of the conditions. You just get out of walker out of the hotel and it's instant heat, and it's so tough. Our physiologist described it as we're starting this race in the red zone where we'd be usually just ending a race. So kind of that end point where you're just surviving is kind of where we were starting the race in Doha. So every single move, every single pace judgment, every single decision was so key to whether you're going to have a successful race or not.
Well, you obviously made some very smart decisions. You walked a very smart race. You started off slow. You came through very strong towards the end, exactly what Callum did in the marathon as well. Was that your plan going into the championships?
Yeah, 100%. You know, every single kilometre was almost like strategically planned. I'd put a plan together and stuck to it, which, you know, I don't always do at championships, and everything was going to plan perfectly. I was decreasing by 30 seconds every 5k, so, and I was just moving through the places, and I knew I was roughly in the top eight as I went into the last 5k, and I would have had a couple more faster kilometers in me as well, and who knows whether I made any more places up. But unfortunately I got a second red card and didn't want kind of the repeat of what happened in London, you know, getting that disqualification, which is my only disqualification in 6 years. However, it was obviously so public.
Yeah.
It was in the back of my mind all along. And so I did ease off because I thought, well, a month ago, I didn't think I'd even be competing at these World Championships. And now I have the opportunity of getting another top eight at a major champs. And it was tough to decide to take my foot off the pedal, as I didn't really believe I deserved the red cards, to be honest. And we analysed it and looked back, and it was more to do with, well, we potentially think it was more to do with kind of taking on the amount of stuff that we were taking on in our cooling strategy. So ice scarves, replacement caps, cold water bottles, our own personal drink bottles. We're taking it all on. It all stuck together with like sellotape, basically. We tore it apart, and it was quite a clever job by British Athletics, so fair play to them. But I think I probably shortened my stride, and it definitely had an impact on my technique, which in the marathon, you don't have to worry about your running technique in terms of getting disqualified. But obviously we do in the walks. And so I was a little bit disappointed to receive two cards. But, you know, I can't fault the judges. That's how it panned out.
Well, there were some pretty ingenious contraptions that people had come up with to cope with that weather. We all stayed up. There was lots of us stayed up all through the night to watch the walks, and they were pretty entertaining. And as you said, we didn't know what position were people in, as well as you didn't, because it was very confusing with DQs and people being lapped and all the rest of it. So to come seventh at the World Championships in those conditions is very, very impressive. Just looking forward to the Olympics next year, which is obviously going to be everybody's priority. Once again, we're expecting the hot weather. We're not quite sure when it's going to be. It's moved, isn't it? The walks have moved from Tokyo to Sapporo.
Yeah, I think they've moved it 800 kilometres north to save us 2 degrees. I mean, well done, IOC. Talk about corrupt. But I mean, yeah, absolute joke of a decision, to be honest, to remove the free events from the city that is paying a fortune to host these Olympic Games. To probably stop a lot of athletes from their families from attending, because you might only have one Olympics. You never know. I'm fortunate that I might be on for a second, and you want to be there celebrating with your family and experiencing it all, not out in a hotel in the middle of nowhere. As you know, it's not going to feel very Olympic, and so it's a thoroughly disappointing decision for what probably will make very little difference, as it's going to be bloody hot. You're going to have to prepare the same way anyway. We're not changing anything. So I'm not really sure what they're doing. And the talks are they're going to stick the medal ceremony back in the stadium in Tokyo. So I do hope they've got the funds to fly everybody's family back so they can be a part of that.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. Just looking forward to Tokyo. The qualification is 121, which you did get earlier this year. So you have automatically qualified for Tokyo already, is that correct?
Not until the trial, basically.
Well, the trial,
the walk's the same as any other event. If I can go and finish top two in the trial in June, then yeah, I should be on the plane. Obviously, I want to replicate that time and go actually faster and try and challenge my British record next year at some point. But it's nice not to have to go and chase qualifying times and stuff like that. It's a bit of a strange one. You know, I haven't been in a situation where you've got to think about qualifying times for a long time. However, this is obviously the criteria has changed so much. This is such a hard qualifying time that, you know, you've got to bear that in mind.
You're ranked 23rd in the world at the moment, which I was surprised. I thought you'd be higher. But your Doha performance isn't in the rankings. Is that because the time was so slow that the points don't accumulate?
That's exactly right. I looked a while back, but I haven't looked since. So I think I've fallen even further back there now, because I was ranked 15th going into Doha.
Right.
And so then I finished top 8 and I actually fell further back.
Right.
So, yeah, it shows that kind of that system doesn't always really work. And so my previous times and performances, which got me in the top 8, was from like Berlin and Commonwealth. So they've obviously dropped off the radar now. And because I haven't had a great season, you know, I've got slower performances to rely on, and thankfully it still keeps me, as you say, 23rd. But, you know, that doesn't look great for when you talk about, you know, lottery funding and things like that. Oh, why has Tom slipped back 10 places? Well, actually, he still finished top 8 in the world, but it was in a bloody desert. So
yeah,
kind of hopefully they'll let me off.
I would say that people aren't really taking much notice of world rankings at the moment. I don't think they make any sense, and they're going to take a couple more years to settle in before people take them very seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
So looking forward to next year, Tokyo is the priority. What else have you got planned in the preparation before? Are you going to do anything indoors?
I've got absolutely nothing else planned, right, if I'm honest. My life is about Tokyo next year, and that is it. I'm going to race as little as possible, if I'm truly honest. I turn 30 next year, and so I'm an old git when it comes to sport. And what I have noticed in recent years is kind of indoors and the shorter, faster stuff, as much as I love it, and boy do I love putting on a show and racing in those competitions, it doesn't do my body any good. I've done a lot of work to kind of fix the back problem that I had from this year, and so I think I've got to bear that in mind before I commit to any of sort of the indoor or shorter races.
Tom, before you start calling yourself old, we should just note that Joao Vieira got a silver medal at the World Championships and he's 43, and Jesus Angel Garcia came 7th and he's 49. So you've got another 5 Olympics in you.
Yeah, behave. I'm not going that long, and I'm certainly not doing 50k. The 50k definitely opens itself up to older athletes, you know, especially that race, just survival of the bloody fittest. That was incredible from the pair of them. And it does show, you know, they had 25, 30 years worth of training in their legs, and they outlasted,
yeah,
you know, some young 20-year-olds. So that's incredibly impressive. But yeah, goodness me, I'm not going that long. I want a holiday.
Would you ever try the 50K?
Nah, I don't think so. I think, I think the only time would have been is if... It's a great excuse now. Callum nicked a couple of my British records earlier this year. And so I would have said, if I had the chance to hold all the British records at the same time, I might have done it. But now it's like, oh, the 5K, will I get that back? Well, I've gone faster indoors than that record, so maybe, but I might not. And then I might not have this record. And then when am I going to fit a 50K in? And why on earth would anybody want to do a 50K anyway? So, yeah, no, I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy with what I've achieved over every other distance than the 50K.
I think that's a smart decision. Just talking about the other guys at the World Championships, unfortunately, they all were DQ'd. You were the last Brit guy standing in the walks. Could you just explain to people, just quickly, the rules about walking and why people get DQ'd? Because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what the actual rule is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people think when we get DQ'd, it's because we're purposely trying to cheat as well. I think, you know, where where athletes are disqualified for stepping in or blocking someone or, you know, pushing somebody over or whatever on the track, you know, that's because of, you know, they're breaking the rules in terms of they're gaining unfair advantage. Whereas we, you know, we work hard on our technique day in, day out. We race walk every single day to try and ensure it's a safe and solid technique. We know we can't push the limits, because if you do, you get disqualified. So no one's trying to do that. It's just you might have a bad day in terms of running and that doesn't notice, or you might finish 20th instead of in the top 10. But our bad day ultimately means you receive red cards from the judges, because you're basically not walking perfectly. And that means you're not landing with a straight leg, or you've got clear loss of contact, so the judges can see you've got both feet off the ground. So when you see your slow-mo TV shots and stuff like that, and you see me or whoever with both feet off the ground, doesn't necessarily mean we are cheating, because, you know, there is a little bit of leeway there for us. As soon as the judges see it, who are, you know, well trained and well practiced in that, they give out the red cards, and Yeah, it was really disappointing for the boys. I watched it back and I thought some of the cards were deserved and some of them weren't really. And what can you do? That is our sport and the judges did their job. And unfortunately, the British got a lot of DQs and I hope the boys will work hard on their technique to turn that around.
Because the rule is not that you can't have 2 feet off the ground. It's you can't be visible by the naked eye. So it doesn't matter if you show a slow-mo or a photo. That's not how it's judged, is it?
Yeah, exactly. We get a lot of abuse online. We get a lot of abuse over the years. I have especially when, you know, I've campaigned for TV races and a lot of people, to be fair, it's more athletics fans than it is general public, say, oh, you know, all these athletes are both feet off the ground, so ultimately means they're running, and it's all straight legged running, and it's just so different. It uses such different muscles. It's completely opposite. It's such a difficult technique, and so yeah, the IAAF have actually, I don't know, about 20 years ago they changed the wording in the rule to allow this loss of contact as cameras and technology started picking it up, because they were like, we want to keep it keeps the event athletic, if you get what I mean.
So isn't there some new rule? I mean, there's a lot of talk about having a chip in your shoe to find out if you lose contact. And how would that affect everything?
Well, I mean, again, this has been rumoured for about half a century, I was going to say, half a decade. it feels like half a century, that this new tech was due to be tested in Doha, but it didn't happen. Surprise, surprise. And let's just point out also that tech isn't the greatest thing to come to sport. It pretty much VAR's ruining football. I mean, one of my training partners out here, Chris Linker, was the German athlete, and everybody thought I finished sixth because Chris's timing chip didn't work in Doha.
Same happened to Callum in the marathon. We had no clue where he was because his chip stopped working.
Exactly. So technology does not always work, and so hence why we've waited so many years for this chip that's going to detect when we've got so much loss of contact. And again, we don't know whether that's going to be zero loss of contact or whether that's going to be the same 0.4 milliseconds, which is what, you know, biomechanically is apparently what the judges can then notice. Anything over that is then deemed as visible loss of contact. So whether they're going to set it so that's the measure or what, who knows? Honestly, it's time the IAAF got over themselves and just let athletics be, for goodness sake. Add a few events back into the Diamond League before Christian Taylor and the world takes over and they're all out of a job.
Tom, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today. Really good luck for Tokyo. Would you potentially go to Paris as well for the Europeans?
Oh, good. You know what? I totally forgot there's a European. Wish you could show it's the Olympic year. Maybe. I would. You know, I love racing for GB. It's an absolute honour. So I would never say no to any sort of team selection. But yeah, everything's on the Olympics. So who knows?
Whatever you choose to race next year, good luck. We'll be cheering you on. And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Oh, well, thank you for your ever continued support. It really means a lot.
Hi, I'm Kathy Freeman. And you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
No.
Backstreet! I did it all the time.
Always so great to hear from Tom. He's so chatty.
And he was really nice because he's obviously off warm weather training in Brisbane at the moment and took the time to sit down and talk to us. I think he was pleased to get out of the heat and have a bit of spare time laying down.
I was blown away by what he said about his temperature at the start of the race.
Yeah, because he said he was talking to his doctor or whoever, and that whatever, I don't know how you measure these things, but what it was at the beginning is what it should have been normally would be at the end. And the conditions were ridiculous, but also he said I trained for these conditions. Yeah. So like, yes, it was hot. Yes, it was not acceptable, but I knew what it was going to be like, and I ran a race that was consistent with that.
And also, it's the same walked a race. It's the same conditions for everybody, wasn't it? So yeah. Like, you know, the ones who did well, the people who coped with the conditions well, but also planned ahead. You know, thought it through. One thing I wanted to ask about was, can you please explain how his world ranking went down after coming seventh in the world?
Well, so, because most people obviously, and we talked about this, about world rankings and how going to the championships really boosts your rankings. Because in the IAAF rankings, you get points for the performance, so the time or the distance, and you also get a different amount of points depending on where you performed that. So yes, we said at the beginning when these rankings come in, everybody gets the same for their national championships, because you can't go around differentiating between national championships. But the
the World Championships will get the highest amount of points, as will the Olympics. The Diamond League final will get a high amount of points. Diamond Leagues will get high amount of points. And the lesser the meeting, it doesn't matter what the performance level is, will get a less amount of points. Now, obviously, he got a lot of points for being at the World Championships and coming seventh, but because it was so slow, it was one outside of the women's world record, I think. Therefore, the performance points were really low. So he has actually gone down in the rankings because one of his performances from last year has now fallen off, and he's left with three middling rankings. So he's gone down to 23rd. But it's fine. He's qualified for the World Championship, for the Olympics, and he just needs to win the British Championship, so I don't think it'll be a problem.
Not the time to do it. But I don't think that's been properly thought through, because not all races are always run for times, are they? 100 metres, you have to run as fast as you can. A middle distance race...
You think it hasn't been thought through?
That's something I've done anything before. It's my goodness.
But also, can we just talk about how brilliant Tom has been? Because I think he came sixth at the Olympics... We won't talk about London, but then he came eighth at the Europeans, second at the Commonwealths, and now seventh at the Worlds. He's one of Britain's best athletes. Yeah,
he's truly world class.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And not just he's got a high profile and he's brilliant at doing the PR and he's brilliant at the interviews and everything. He actually is one of Britain's most successful athletes, and we mustn't forget that. He is one of those people who will get a medal one day.
Yeah.
Because he's always there. He always performs when he needs to. And the coming up for Tokyo, he's training hard. It will be hot conditions once again. Mm-hmm. He knows how to walk in hot conditions. He proved that there and in Rio. So I'm not saying he's going to get an Olympic medal, but I do expect a really good performance from him there. And of course, the Europeans, which he might not go to, will be later in the year. And, you know, it's done for a gold.
So there's performing when it counts, when you're Tom Bosworth and you do it year in, year out. But then there's also reaching your first World Championships and then, my God, performing when it counts to produce one of the moments of the champs. Can we talk about our next interviewee?
We had to talk to Sophie McKinnon, didn't we?
We did our review of Doha the other week, and all three of us agreed that our favourite moment of the whole World Championships was you qualifying for the final.
It was my favourite moment of the Championships as well, you know. It was absolutely fantastic, and I'm still sort of on cloud nine. It's hard to put it into words.
So you ended up coming, you qualified for the final with 18.61, which was a massive PB from you. And you ended up coming 11th overall. So overall, were you really happy with the Championships?
Yeah, I think, you know, me and my coach spoke about what our aims were going into the Championships, and all we really wanted to do was to qualify for the Olympics and, you know, make the final. And those two boxes I kind of ticked. So, the final was a bonus, and I was absolutely spent from the qualification. I was still quite pleased, you know, to come 11th.
Because you still threw, 17.99? So it's still well up there in your PB.
Yeah, I think it was my fifth best throw of all time or something like that. So, you know, it's still... If I wouldn't have done that 18.61, that was still a pretty good throw on sort of how my season had sort of panned out until the big throw, obviously. So, yeah, I was quite pleased with, you know, staying at a consistent level.
So that 18.61, I'm going to keep harping on about it because it's such a massive throw. It means you're ranked 13th in the world. Like we said, you came 11th at the World Championships. If you'd thrown that distance in the final, you would have come 8th and you would have beaten the European and Olympic champion. So you really are one of the most successful British athletes out there at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic to throw that distance in qualification, and it was huge. You know, it broke some pretty big barriers in women's shot putting in Britain. You know, it was the furthest throw, I think someone said, for 28 years or something like that, and the first person in the final for 36. So yeah, I was kind of astonished, really, that I'd sort of, you know, maybe paved the way for British throwing, or repaved the way, I should say.
Absolutely. So what's it been like since you've been back? Because you've been doing lots of media stuff.
Yeah, it's been really crazy since I've been back, to be honest. You know, shot putting isn't the glamour event, if you like. So we don't necessarily get a lot of media coverage. So it's been lovely to sort of get that recognition for the event, and obviously, you know, for that big throw.
And you said something interesting there, which was about how trying to bring back some interest into the throws. And people performing like you have, it means that you are now a role model for young athletes who are trying to get into throws or haven't thought about getting into throws. Just talk a little bit about how under-recognised throwing has been in this country, and what were your inspirations when you got into this event?
Yeah, I think, you know, in this country we've had some great javelin throwers in the past, and obviously the last shot putter was, or prominent shot putter was really sort of Judy Oakes. So, yeah, it's nice to try and be that role model for maybe, you know, younger athletes in this day and age. I think, you know, if we look too far back, people sort of competing now can't relate to that. So it's nice to have something, you know, that's happening now. But when I started athletics, you know, Valerie Adams was on the top of her game, and she was so dominant and absolutely amazing athlete. I kind of looked up to her as a shot putter because her dominance was just massive.
Well, we absolutely love Valerie Adams. She's one of our favourite athletes of all time. We are unusual, as like we're massive athletics fans, and we'll watch anything. We've turned up at stadiums to watch hammer qualifying in the past. But obviously that's not something that the general public are interested in. But people like Valerie Adams, people like yourself, really are an inspiration for, especially women, I think, who are not always praised for strength. In athletics, we have, like, we've got 5 foot men, 6 foot women. There's something for everybody in athletics, but it's not, strong women is not something that's often really thought of as a positive. Is that something you've ever noticed or felt?
Yeah, I think obviously people think shot putting is quite a masculine event. I think especially from the past, you know, there was this big stigma about sort of, you know, drug taking in shot putting and things like that. And I don't think that did the event any favours, because people sort of, you know, if you say shot putter, people think, oh, you're massive, you know. They don't really see that actually it's a very technical and athletic event. I think it's kind of underestimated how good of an all-round athlete you have to be. So yeah, I think it can be difficult as a female shot putter. You know, there's obviously stuff around body image and all that kind of thing. But I'm quite stubborn. You know, it's never bothered me as such. I've got quite a thick skin, so I do it because I love it, and nothing would ever change my mind.
And having people like you in the sport is going to be nothing but a benefit for everybody going forward. Just talking about your career, you were a really good junior, European junior silver medalist, World Youth silver medalist, but I think in especially in the strength events, in throws, it does take a long time to develop. So what was your experience between being a very successful junior until this success at the World Championships, and how difficult has that been?
Yeah, I think going from a junior to a senior has been very difficult. I mean, we had, you know, futures funding, which was great, but I don't think the gap has been bridged particularly well, especially for events like throws, where it does take a lot longer. I think you're expected to go from a great junior to a great senior straight away without really that transition period. You know, because in sprinting, I think that's a bit more possible, that you can be a good junior and a good senior sort of at the same time. But for throwing, that's just not a thing, because people are so much stronger and more physically capable than you. So, yeah, I think I didn't get great support in that transition period, but I've been one of the lucky ones who's kind of stuck at it and been a bit stubborn, if you like, and pushed on sort of no matter whether you get the support or not.
Yeah, because we had a discussion with Sean Pickering over the summer regarding the difficulty of strength-based athletes, throwers in particular, transitioning from juniors to seniors. And he made the very good point that obviously as a junior you can get by with being just big for your age. And then you change to a senior, you're against bigger, stronger people, and it does take a long time to develop that technique and the additional strength in order to succeed. And that British athletics aren't supporting throwers the same way that they do people who are competing other events. So did you get any support, or have you had any support at all, or funding or anything like that?
I think it's hard. I think it's actually a lack of understanding for all the events, you know, because they've got a generic performance funnel, which not all the events fit into, because, you know, ultimately we're a very diverse sport. We can't be treated the same as each other, you know, middle distance, sprinting, throwing, jumping, we're all very, very different. For me personally, I got podium potential funding in 2013 and then was dropped off that after 2 years of not not performing, maybe, from in that sort of transition period. So that's the only support I had, and the rest has been funded by sort of private sponsors and myself.
Just looking forward to next year, you've qualified for the Olympics now, so that's one box ticked, one very important box ticked. What are your plans going up to the Olympics, and what are your hopes for next year?
So we're going to take quite a short season next year. I think we're going to look at not competing too much, because obviously if I hadn't qualified for the Olympics, it would have been a very different story. We'd have been chasing all around Europe to get qualification standard. But, you know, I think we can sort of be a bit more picky with our competitions and just make sure I'm throwing well when I go into the competitions. I mean, I'm not going to the world indoors because I think it's going to be really hard to do three peaks, which will essentially be three peaks in a year if you include Doha, you know, and the focus has to be the Olympics and then obviously hopefully the Europeans in Paris.
Of course, yeah.
Because, you know, I'd like to go there and be really competitive. So, yeah, I think that's the season aims really for next year. Obviously, big focus on the Olympics and then be competitive at the European Championships.
And also, the new stature this year, the distance you've thrown, being in a championship final, will get you invited to a lot more meets. So maybe we'll see you on the Diamond League as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd really like to compete in as many Diamond Leagues as I can this year. Obviously, it's good to be exposed to that high level of competition on a regular basis. Mm. And, you know, that can only do a good thing for my distances and you know, my ability to learn and throw further.
And hopefully for your bank balance as well.
Well, yeah, that's always a bonus. You know, with Diamond Leagues, it's nice to get paid for what you do.
Absolutely. Sophie, thanks so much for coming to talk to us. I mean, it's a spectacular year. Like I said, it was our favourite moment of the World Championships. And we've just got everything crossed for you going forward, that you can improve on that throw, get into the 90 metres. I know what big hope of yours is to break the British record.
Yeah, eventually. That's what I'd like to go on and do. You know, people are sort of talking about me throwing 19 metres next year in 2020. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see whether that happens or not. But, you know, ultimately, I want to go on in my career at some stage and break the British record and be the best. You know, Britain has ever seen, but Judy and I have a lot of jokes about it, so you know, hopefully it'll happen soon. But whether it's next year or the year after, you know, I don't mind, as long as it happens at some stage.
Well, we'll be rooting for you. We're really looking forward to seeing you come out next year and inspiring other throwers, because there's some good throwers. I mean, Amelia's throwing well as well, so maybe we can get you both over 18 nearer 19 metres next year and getting two people to the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, it's been lovely this year that domestically, you know, the competition's been good and Scott's obviously now gone over 20 metres in the yeah. men's shot, which is really bringing up the standard of shot putting in general. And, you know, it'd be nice domestically if I had another competitor over 18 metres, because that only does wonders for me and pushes me on to throw further and further.
Take two.
Take two.
Okay, take two.
Hi, I'm Kathy Freeman and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
Yay!
We had to get Sophie McKinnon because we came off the World Championships and we were all in complete unanimous agreement that she was our moment of the whole championship. So there was absolutely no doubt we were going to be interviewing her.
I loved it when she just completely deadpanned. Yeah, it was probably my favourite moment of the championship. That throw was just great, which means we've had Britain's two best female shot putters on the pod now in recent months, and the future of the sport for this nation is really looking bright.
Yeah, what I love about Sophie is she's I mean, obviously a great athlete, a young athlete who's getting better and better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Rapidly.
Yeah, rapidly. She threw, what, 1863, was it?
Yeah. Like
3 years ago, we were going, oh my God, someone threw nearly 17 metres. So she's consistently a metre and a half better than she was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
If she puts on another 50 centimetres, she's in the medal zone. If she can put on another metre, she's well up in the medal zone. So, and she's 25, she's young for a thrower, she's been very consistently getting better and better and better. From this performance, the amount of publicity she's got, amount of local sponsorship, she has to go on UK funding.
Surely.
She has to.
Doesn't come much more podium potential than that.
No, exactly. Mm. Has to go on
UK
funding.
I feel her rank coming on.
When she
not now, I'm talking about 6 months time.
She has to. No, it should come out in the next couple
of weeks.
She has to go on funding. She works full time and she loves doing that and it works for her. Mm. But just imagine if you could even have one day off to rest or do whatever you need to do, that would make a massive difference. And the other thing I love about her is we say this all the time about athletics and how we love athletics because there's something for everybody. She's a strong woman and that is not something that's celebrated in society.
Mm.
And she doesn't give a shit. She's always loved throwing. Agreed. She loves being strong and she doesn't care what anyone says about her. And that's a real, really good message to be sending to other young people, girls who want to do strength events, but also just anyone who wants to do something that they love to do and forget what anyone else thinks.
Sophie, we loved having you on the pod. Please come back. You know who we hadn't had on the pod previously?
Yeah.
And I told people that we'd got this person on the pod. And honestly, people, like, lots of friends of mine who don't normally listen because athletics isn't their thing, they want to tune in because that is how adored this young man is. People love him. And the nation's collective hearts broke when he was interviewed after that 200-metre final in Doha. Bayo, I've stolen your thunder. I've kind of given away who it is, but go on, please introduce him.
Here's Adam. First of all, welcome to the podcast. I don't think you've
actually been
officially on the Backstreet Boys before.
No, never. This is the first time, so I feel very honoured.
very, very pleased to have you. Obviously, we've spoken to you in mixed zones and that before, but this is our first proper interview.
Yeah.
We thought, following on from Doha, we would interview some of our favourite athletes and some of our athletes who had, like, some of the British athletes who had, like, good stories to tell coming off of that. You obviously have a story to tell, but I have to say, for starters, for us fans, the interview you did after the 200 metres, it was a bit upsetting for us. You apologised. You said you thought maybe you'd let us down. None of which was true, obviously. Oh. But I just wonder how you are feeling about that now.
It's still tough to sort of take and just to be so close to something and be in such a good position and throw it away because of just silly mistakes, really. But it's sort of... I'm a bit less... I don't know. Yeah, a lot of people sort of gave me such nice messages. I've not had support like that in such a long time. And in terms of, like, the messages I received were so humbling and made me very emotional reading it after sort of going through people taking the time out of their day to tweet me and send me emails and Instagram and everything. And it was very, very humbling. But yeah, it was tough. It was a tough thing to sort of take after coming so close in Rio and being in an even better sort of opportunity to sort of go and maybe even win in Doha, which at the beginning of the year, people probably wouldn't have even written me to even be on the 200 meter team. So it was tough to take, but I'm over it sort of now. And I know what I can do for Tokyo, and I've just got to just get it right on the day and not make the same mistake. So I'm okay about it.
It's so interesting because there's obviously a huge athletics fan, and we watch and we support people. And when someone like yourself, who's, you know, universally liked, you know, all the fans really, really like you because you're such a nice guy.
Oh, thank you.
When you come on and say something like that, it almost feels like, I almost feel bad because I think, like, no, don't think that, Adam. You know, no one's thinking that. We support you, and we thought you actually ran really well. What was it you think... What would it have done for you to be happy? Were you thinking medal? Were you thinking PB? So what was it itself that you feel made you think you maybe let people down?
Just the way, just the belief and amount of things that, the amount of sort of belief that people have put in me over the last couple of years, especially when I actually haven't really performed to how I should be at the standard that people expect. And people have really backed me this year, sort of winning trials and running fast and to not even run sub 20,
yeah.
I don't feel like I did justice to the people that put so much hard work into me and belief into me, because obviously people just see the athletes running or competing on the track, but there's such a big team that of people that put such hard work into it that I just feel like I'd let everyone down. And because we get 10 or 20 seconds as a sprinter, and it to showcase a year's work, really, like a year's training. And if you get it wrong, for me, I felt like I just completely got it wrong. And it's not a waste of everyone's time because it's sort of getting back, running consistently again and competing with the world's best. But yeah, in that one moment as a sort of 25-year-old guy who's been in the sport for quite a long time now, I should have known better and I should have executed a lot better. But yeah, it was, like I said, the interview was, it was a tough thing to do, but obviously you have to be professional and give a proper interview and yeah, it is what it is, I guess, but it was a tough interview to give.
Well, we certainly appreciate that because obviously some people in that circumstance don't want to talk, you know, come on and be so honest and so kind of raw with your feelings. It really is appreciated by people like myself. Just getting technical for a minute, you say you thought you made mistakes. What specifically was it you thought you'd done wrong?
I just got caught up in the other people in the race, and I knew that I was running really, really good. Like, I was running really consistently, and I knew, like, I'd run in the heats, I'd run like 20.06, and I was really taking it. Like, I wasn't gassing it as much as I normally would. And then in the semi-final, even then, I wasn't 100%. And then all of a sudden I got caught up with having Noah Lyles inside of me and Andre outside of me. And obviously I train with Andre, so I know sort of how he runs and I know he's very strong the back end of the race. But I was feeling confident that my bend was good and I knew that I was going to come off the bend first and it was going to be catch me if you can. But instead of actually how I normally run the bend, I accelerate really hard and I get to about 70, 80 meters and I take a good like 10, 15 meters of just not really like accelerating, not pushing, but just sort of relaxing and not sort of coasting and maintaining your speed before you then re-accelerate off the bend. And I, instead of doing that, I just hit it as hard as I could to 150 and was just like, yeah, if I die, I die. And that's just not the normal way that I run the 200 meters. And that's why I died so badly at the last sort of 40 meters of that race and just went completely backwards, had nothing left, had no bounce. And then as soon as Noah went past me, I could feel Andre on my shoulder. And then as soon as Andre went past me, it was just terrible mechanics. There was no bounce, there was nothing there. And I've seen some of the footage back and people are sort of saying, oh, but you ran to your level. But honestly, my level is so much higher than that. And training with some of the best sprinters in the world, pretty much everyone in my training group has gone, like Andre ran 19.8 this year. Sean Borgi, we call him Sean, the Chinese guy, he won the London Diamond League, he's run 19.8 this year. Like I know what my level is at, and that wasn't it. So that was what was disappointing for me. So, yeah, technically that was sort of what I got wrong in the race, but I know how to fix that. And the fact that I can be winning in a field like that to 150 against people that have run super fast like this season, it gives me good confidence and hopefully shows people, especially a lot of people who doubted me, that I can be in the mix and I can run with these guys and I can, when I'm healthy, challenge for those medals, because it's in UK at the moment, we've got to find these medals somewhere and they can't just rely on relays. And we've got Dina obviously and Katarina, but the men have to start stepping up as well, and I think we'll hopefully do that next season. So
It's interesting what you say then. I think what you've done then is put your feelings afterwards in context. When you say you feel you let people down or that you apologize, etc., it's more to do with how you run the race rather than the position in the race. Would you have been happy if you had run sort of technically better but still come fourth? If you'd say run under 20 seconds, you thought you'd run a good race but come fourth, that would have been better for you than what happened here.
I think so, yeah. But it's still tough. Fourth is the worst place to finish. And I get so much stick from my friends and they started writing my name now with a four as the first A, D, A, M. Like, that's how, like, my friends just keep me humble. They're really cool. Like, it's funny and, like, they give me a lot of banter, obviously, for fourth in Rio now and then fourth here. It's yeah, technically, if I'd been a lot better and I'd run faster and to my potential, and if I'd run my best race, which in track and field, you're never going to hear an athlete say, do you know what, I ran that race perfectly. I don't think you'll ever meet an athlete who doesn't have something to complain about when they run a race. Like, there's always something that could be better. But if I'd run it a little bit better and to sort of the standard, then I would have been a lot happier. But no, I was going in expecting a medal, especially in the 200, and to not deliver, that's, for me, that's a failure. Same as Rio. That was a failure for me as well. So hopefully I can get it right at some point, but it's time's ticking on, really.
Well, you're not that old, come on. Now, how was Doha overall? Because obviously going in, we'd heard, like, you know, all the horror stories about the weather and the crowd and that. But from sitting at home, we didn't actually go to this championship.
Yeah.
But from sitting and watching at home, it was pretty great. And I just wondered if that's how it felt at the championships or if you had a different experience.
I loved it. I actually loved it. I think they did a great job. I think obviously there was issues the first few days of the events, like when competing in the 100 metres, and the stadium's completely empty. To be fair, there was more Brits in the stadium than anyone. And I feel like, and it's one of the, I can't remember who it was, one of the athletes, we were talking about it after the race, and he was just like, oh yeah, you got the biggest cheer in the 100 metres. I was like, yeah, because the whole stadium was full of British fans. So it was like, yeah, I don't know, it was a weird one. But the way that the champs was put on was pretty cool, in terms of the aircon in the stadium was something that was a bit strange, like, warming up outside, and it was so hot, so you obviously had to tailor your warm up to then go down this long air conditioned tunnel, sit in the cool room, then come outside and then have the light show. The light show was awesome. It was a bit strange, and I wish someone had warned us about it, because obviously the lights go completely down, you're sitting out there for a bit of like a bit of time and you get a bit cold and then all of a sudden the lights come on and you're a bit blinded and the guy says on your marks and you're like, whoa, like give me a second to readjust a little bit. But no, I had a great time and I think the stadium is unreal. Hopefully we brought some new sort of fans to athletics, and obviously you see what Barsham did when he was jumping. The stadium was just on fire. You could just, it was, the noise was crazy. So I actually liked it. I think maybe a little bit, it's hard to say what could have been better, but it wasn't my favourite champs. My favourite is obviously any time I compete in London. It's just it's just a completely different level. But it was a good champs. It was a good, they did a good job, and they, towards the end of it, obviously they got a lot of, the IAAF got a lot of stick for the sort of capacity of the stadium not being filled and stuff. And I saw Gabby Logan's interview, and she was absolutely grilling. What's his name? Yeah. So it was cool, but they've got a lot to work on, and I think it was a good tester event for them to see their organisation probably for the World Cup. I'm guessing that's why we had the athletics there, money and seeing what it's like for the World Cup. So, but it was okay. It was okay. Not my favourite, but it was cool.
The same conclusion that it wasn't perfect, but there was positives to take from it. I mean, just the fact that you have a whole new region in the world competing, winning medals, you know, which makes it successful championships for them. But it was really interesting to see the huge African contingent in the crowd, which you don't get like in Europe.
Yeah.
And so we felt like, despite its flaws, it was maybe opening up to another audience, which of course athletics does need going forward.
Yeah, it was brilliant to sort of be in the stadium and hear the sort of the African fans chanting and singing, and it was such a cool environment to be in, and something we don't normally get in the athletics world. So no, that was really cool. So I agree with you with that. It's maybe just a few years too early, or maybe if they have another event at some point and they just market it a bit better, hopefully. Yeah. Like I said, you guys are the most famous track fans, and you guys didn't even come over. So it was like,
I don't think we've got a lot of competition though.
Exactly. But it's like, yeah, but that's what I mean. Like it just wasn't marketed as well as it could have been, I think. But as athletes, there was some great athletics, and I think we saw some unreal performances, and there were some really good events, like not the normal events that people would maybe expect to be like, do you know what? That's the event I'm most excited about. Like for as an athlete competing, to see the men and the women's four hurdles was like, was nuts. The men's, it was all the hurdles. Like the four hurdles was crazy. The 100 meter hurdles, I had obviously Nia as my training partner. To see what happened to Omar and Orlando Ortega, and that sort of whole saga was a bit nuts. So yeah, not necessarily like the 100 meters or the 200 meters, which usually would be the blue ribbon event. People would be like, yeah, that's what I'm most excited to see, the head-to-head between this person and that person. But actually, it opened up a lot of other events, which as someone who's a fan of athletics like myself as well, it was awesome to see and to spectate.
That's so interesting you say that, because that was literally my next question.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, for the last decade or more, in fact, going back as long as I remember, you know, coming into a championships, the talk is always about the men's 100, you know, the fastest men in the world. Obviously, with Usain Bolt over the last decade, that has been especially so. This is the first major championship with him not around, and it did seem that the men's sprints this year were just a bit low-key. I mean, I don't think it helps that the two big names in the 100 are kind of various degrees of problematic, which we won't go into. But I just wondered if it felt the same to you on the circuit and in the championships, where the men's sprints weren't really taking the top billing that they usually do.
Yeah, it felt odd. Obviously, I've competed with Usain for many years, and you notice when he's competing, there's just a different energy, and maybe that energy will come back. Maybe it just needs a new face. But in terms of the sprints, yeah, it wasn't like, I think you couldn't really predict, obviously Coleman, when people saw what sort of shape he was in, people were like, yeah, Coleman's going to win the 100. But talking from like the two, everyone sort of expected Noah Lyles to walk it, and everyone was talking about, oh, he's going to run this fast and that fast. But actually, throughout the rounds and stuff, I don't think you could have called the exact medals, when before it was always, Usain's going to win, how fast is he going to run? But yeah, It was a shame, really, because obviously as a sprinter, that's you want your event to be what people are talking about, but and for the right reasons as well. But yeah, for a lot of other events, it opened it up, and to see some new sort of stars emerging was, like I said, as a fan of the sport, it's great to see. And and maybe some other athletes getting the spotlight that they deserve. For example, Christian Taylor, like my one of my training partners, who this guy is just, he's won everything. And he's just like, he's just a beast. Like, people don't realize how much of a freak of nature he is. He won the Olympics on one leg, had a problem with his Achilles, and then won the Olympics on the other leg. Like, it's
I forgot that, yeah.
Yeah, people amazing. Just, he's so underrated. And like, I always banter with him because we now have only got one British world record that's held by a British guy, which is Jonathan Edwards. And he's always like, yeah, I'm coming for that British record. You're not going to have nothing left. And I'm like, yeah, but he's like, but he'll get it. He will get it. Like, he should have got it this year, but hopefully, touch wood, he stays healthy and he can fly next year, because he's a, yeah, he's a freak of nature and such a nice, genuinely nice, such a nice person guy, as well. Yeah. First person to text me after the 200 meters. Like, he's like, there's, it's little things like that just make a big difference. He was competing that next day as well, and he's the first person to always send you a message or just check to see how you're doing. And yeah, it's like I said, it opened up the athletics to, for some new stars to sort of emerge and come through, and older stars to sort of show people how amazingly talented they are.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, because I feel in many ways that Usain Bolt was a huge benefit to the sport, but I don't
massively
think the sport utilized him well in using it to advance other people. You know, I think
they
concentrated so much on Usain Bolt that there's lots of other stars in other events that kind of got ignored for like a more or less a decade. So I think,
yeah, we had some unreal performances, and it was always the Bolt down, which is understandable because he was unbelievable. But yeah, it doesn't matter if someone goes and runs the world record or whatever happens. DeBarba goes and runs a world record, like Usain Bolt's competing at the end of the night, so people forget that and they're like, oh yeah, what's Bolt going to do? So it's but he was obviously he carried the sport on his back for so long, and like I said, it's now the job of us athletes to make it exciting, and we've got to find people in the sport that people want to see and support and get behind, and those new stars are hopefully going to be coming to the forefront of everyone's sort of knowledge this year, next year, and the next coming Olympic cycle. So no, it's exciting to see.
Well, talking of exciting, at the last World Championships in London, I was in the stadium when you won the gold medal in the
in a relay
4x1. I actually fainted. I've never done in my entire life. I jumped up so quickly. I don't know the like mechanics of it, but like blood went to my head or something, and I just fell over and
no way
to the floor. It's never happened to me before.
Wow.
Hopefully, never happened again.
Yeah.
So this year, unfortunately, you weren't able to like retain your title, but you did not give it a good go. I mean, fantastic time, one of the best times ever. I mean, you've only ever run faster by Jamaica and America. In fact, I've just learned that America have only ever run faster in that exact race that you got beaten in. So
yeah,
it's a crazy, crazy fast time. And it's also great that we've got that strength in depth, you know, to have a different team from last time and still manage to run so fast.
Do you know what? Yeah, you're right. You are right.
Obviously, you know, you would have preferred to win, but were you satisfied with the silver medal?
We were obviously disappointed, but then actually when we sat back and looked at it, we were like, do you know what? It took an American record to beat us, and that team, on paper, everyone would have said, yeah, do you know what? There's no comparison. But obviously we always back ourselves, and you've got to think like the we ran what, 37th, I can't remember, was it 37.3 I think we ran? 37.3 and you look on
36,
what,
I think.
Yeah. You look at what sort of shape everyone was in. People can be in a lot better shape. Look, Nefanil wasn't in his top form. Like he wasn't individually sort of sharp either. Kilty as well wasn't like absolutely flying like he normally is. Zarnell was running great, but sort of like he wasn't sort of banging out his 9.99s. Not, and he should be going 9.8 as well. And myself as well, we were tired. I'd run the 200 as well. Like we know there's room for improvement, and we know we can challenge for the gold. But yeah, we gave it our best shot, and the Americans on the day were just too good. Like we knew they'd put Coleman first, which obviously we weren't sure if he was going to run because he pulled out of the two, but obviously there was some sort of medical exemption or something. And then they also messed up a couple of their changes in the heat. So we were pretty confident, but we knew that Coleman was going to start, and I had to go first to sort of try and minimize the damage, as the guy can run 9.7. So we were like, you need to just minimize the damage as much as possible. And I thought I did a good job. And then Zarnell absolutely flew down the back straight. Coleman and Gatlin had a great exchange, and Gatlin, obviously running how good he has been running the last few years, was just gone. Rogers and Kilty, it was a shame because Zarnell actually tore his hamstring, and as he passed the baton,
so Kilty, during the race.
So Kielty had to basically come to a halt to take the baton in the zone. So we lost a lot of time there as well when we were actually looking at the sort of biomechanical data. And then Nefanil smashed it on, like, brought us from, we were sort of level with the Japanese, and Nefanil just experience and speed just took us through to the silver medal. And to run that fast, we know we didn't have a clean race, where in London we thought we were absolutely flying. Everyone ran really well. The changes were good. We were confident. It was in a home stadium. So it was a very different feeling, but we have high expectations of ourselves, and we always want to go out on the track and challenge for the gold. But like I said, the Americans were too good. So we know we can hopefully do one better in Tokyo, and to have an Olympic gold medal, obviously individually, is what everyone wants, but in the relay would be...
That'll
be unreal. Wow. Just, wow.
You've actually gone and done it again, because you actually answered my next question, which was going to be a geeky fan question about the lineup, as to why, you know, we have Richard Kielty, who's that's such a great starter, world indoor champion, and yourself, who's one of the best bend runners in the world. So we were wondering why Richard didn't do first and you do third, but you've just answered that.
Yeah,
to make sure you're in the beginning.
Yeah, it was that reason. Obviously, on an ideal world, I would have gone third leg. And yeah, I don't know if it would have been different. It might have been, it might not have been, but we knew they were going to put Coleman on first. And at the time, like, I think I had a better chance of running with Coleman than Kielty. And Kielty was running really well on the bends. And we knew that if we can get him we can get him in contention with Mike Rogers, he can hold Mike Rogers and go past him. So and Kielty ran such a good bend as well, and obviously the straight Zarnell locked down the back straight like he always does, and Nefanil experienced anchor. So yeah, that was the main reason why we ran that team. But there's a lot more depth to come in as well. You think of the guys that weren't even there, like, and if all of our sprinters wanted to be part of the relay or wanted to take part in, like, oh my god, the team that we could have could be so dangerous. So it's exciting. It's very exciting. But yeah, you never know what shape people are going to be in and who actually wants to be part of it and stuff. So no, it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, that's interesting, because we've spoken to both Reese and OG in the last sort of year or so, who both have said they have sort of taken themselves out of relay contention for the moment.
Yeah.
Going forward, do we assume there's a place for them in the team, or is it going to be hard?
There's always a place for everyone that wants to be a part of it as a team. The British relay team has had, obviously, its issues in the past, and they've been made public and stuff like that. And we came together as a group and we decided we can really do something special. If everyone puts their problems aside and everyone puts their egos aside when it comes to the relay, doesn't matter what you've run, it's about getting the practice in, working together, running fast, and obviously practicing the changeovers, because that's where we're going to win and lose this. The speed is, everyone can run fast on the day, but it's the changes that make a difference. So yeah, people obviously wanted to focus on individual stuff, and that's fair enough. It's an individual sport we're in. Like, but I, as myself, I always want to be part of the relay team. I think it's such a great opportunity, and I don't know why you wouldn't want to be. It's another chance at a medal. Like, individually, if it doesn't go well, it does go well. It's still another chance to leave the sport with some sort of silverware. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, if people want to take part, they can, but that's everyone's personal opinions and their coaches and their programs and stuff like that. But I'll always make myself available and do my best to sort of get into the team, because it's not an easy team to get into. You think if Danny Talbot's back fit, running the bends how he's running it, Zarnell's flying, Nefanil's flying, CJ's back, like, flying, we got Miguel Francis to come in, Reese, OJ, like, it's just, it's unreal. It's unreal. So it's a tough team to make.
Well, you touched on it there. I mean, it's apparent for all to see, you know, when you follow the sport like we do, it's really apparent that the attitude has completely changed. Naming no names, you know, but you can see just the camaraderie continue is something that wasn't happening a few years back. So
yeah, genuine friends.
The best thing from our perspective is we no longer fear you're going to drop the baton, men or women, you know.
Yeah, we're well drilled.
Americans to do that now. We don't assume that we're going to.
Yeah, we're all well drilled. We're all experienced enough to, and I think that's what it was. It was just experience of being on the world stage and having that confidence in yourself and your teammate to not go early and to trust each other. And we all do that. And like I said, it's a different generation of sprinters sort of at the moment. It's sort of, yeah, my age, everyone's sort of, we're all in and around the same age. We're all like the same sort of things. We all talk on and off the track. We all message each other, Instagram, like WhatsApp, see how we're all doing. Like, we don't have to be buddy, chum, like friends, best friends, like, every day, but it's nice to just check in with people, see how they're doing, see how their bodies are, like mentally, see how everyone's doing. And it makes a massive difference. And like you said, the camaraderie is completely changed. Like we obviously, when we're competing at trials or against each other, we want to be the best sprinter. But away from that, we know, we realise that if we come together, we can do something dangerous. And that's why the relay has seen the success it's seen in the last couple of years. And hopefully we'll continue to get better and better.
Cool. Listen, that's really, really good to hear. We are big Adam Jamili fans here at the Backstreet Boys.
Well, I appreciate that.
So we really wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Be great this year. Completely understand what you're saying, but all we can do is wish you all the best for next year, which is, you know, the big one, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Hopefully, it goes a lot better than this year, and yeah, we can talk again, and I have an Olympic medal around my neck. That would be ideal. But thank you so much for all the support, especially over the years. It's been, you guys are fantastic and so great. So thank you.
Hi, it's KJT, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
Who doesn't love Adam Jamili?
No one.
Okay, that's the correct answer. Because he's such a... And I start out saying, you know, I don't think you maybe realise just how much loved you are in this sport. I really wanted to know from him, because that interview with Jeanette obviously was heartbreaking, and it was so interesting hearing what he had to say. Mm. And coming off of that, you're like, okay, now I understand. Because at the time, I was slightly annoyed with him, if that makes sense, for apologising. You know, I thought, don't, you've got nothing to apologise for. But he was more upset with his race. It wasn't so much the position. It was he knew he'd done things wrong. Mm. And I suppose your emotions are heightened when you've just come off the track, aren't they? And in retrospect, in hindsight, so you can see things a bit differently. But it was really interesting to get that breakdown from him of exactly what it was he thought he'd done wrong.
My two biggest takeaways from that was, firstly, how savage his friends are for replacing the A in his name with a 4 when they message him now, because he's always finishing in fourth place. I mean, there's, you know that expression, it's all banter until somebody cries. Surely Adam has cried at that by this point. That is awful. But the other one is, a more serious point, how simultaneously extraordinarily humble he is, but also how open he is with his ambitions, and how much he is aware that he feels he underperforms at major championships compared to what it is that he wants to go on to achieve. And I just thought that was really nice for someone to pin their colours to the mast like that and really say, right, look, it's about time I won a medal, and I'm going to do it in Tokyo.
But also what's lovely is that he came on the I was going to say the website, on the podcast, because Sophie and Tom had successes in Doha. Adam actually technically had the biggest success. He came fourth, but to him that was
and
a failure.
And got a medal.
And got a medal in the relay, of course, but to him that was a failure. So many people would have not wanted to come on and talk about it. Many people would have sort of considered that something that wasn't worth going over, certainly didn't want to have to explain themselves to us. But as he said, you know, we've always been good to him. We've chatted to him for like
seven
or so years now, you know.
Lucky,
and so it's really, really nice, and just shows what a gentleman he is, that he was happy to come on and talk to us.
It's interesting to hear that he feels he underperforms at championships, because I think he's one of those athletes who overperforms at championships.
I agree, yeah.
He's not someone who wins everything left, right and centre on the Diamond League, but he always performs at championships. Maybe it's not to the medal level yet, but I think we all have big confidence. I mean, remember before, Ratsy said he's going to get medals, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was one of our predictions, because you can count on him at a championships. He's thoroughly dependable, and he always raises his game. He was injured, wasn't he, in the beginning half of this year?
Yeah.
So he's going to have a year where it's all going to click, and he's going to get medals.
That's what Dina has had recently.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether or not you're going to be able to, in 10 years' time, compare their careers, because Dina is such a once-in-a-generation talent, but for British athletics. But Dina finally strung together a couple of years of not being injured, and look what's happened.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a world junior champion, and it does take time to get from being at that level to getting to the senior level. He's done really well,
and he's only just 25.
Yeah.
So you think of him, I mean, I know he's not, but you think of him as being like sort of late 20s by now, don't you? He was only 25 in September or the end of August or something, wasn't he? So yeah, it's not like, you know, we've got plenty more years.
Linda Christie couldn't make the team at 25.
No,
so
that's true. The other interesting thing was, I said, I'm going to ask you like a nerdy question, because it's a thing that sort of athletics nerds want to know about. I was asked him about the order of the relay, which made no sense, you know, technically. But he was right, and he explained it. You know, the fact that, because Christian Kom was in there, they wanted to put someone...
Loved that.
Adam with Christian, because he was going to keep up with him better. Sorry, that's the one we met. No, no, yes, Kristen Cobbins started, didn't he? Because we all thought Adam should be on the second leg. Third leg, sorry. So, yeah, it's just interesting to get that insight, to get those answers, because that's the sort of thing in 5 years' time I'll be saying, well, you know that time. Well, they should have put Adam on third. So at least we have a definitive answer now.
Such a treat going through those three interviews. Thank you very much for nabbing such superstars for the pod. Welcome. I mean, the calibre of guests we have has never been better. It's been absolutely balmy who we've had on, and we're hoping to get back Radzi for our end of year review /2020 preview. So, you know, it's all coming pretty good at Backstreet HQ.
Hi, I'm Greg Rutherford, and you're listening to the Backstreet Boys.
You're a pro, aren't you?
Well, you know.
A couple of very quick AOBs for...
What's an AOB?
Any other business?
Oh.
AOB is for the end of this week's episode. I want to do a quick shout out to Team GB, who are out in Dubai competing at the World Para Athletics. I mean, just to reel off five people who have medalled in the last few days: Hannah Cockcroft, Holly Arnold, Olivia Breen, Thomas Young, Alla Davies. If I got this right, Holly Arnold and Alla Davies and Hannah Cockcroft have now been at least four-time world champions.
Oh.
That is balmy. So great work to the Team GB bunch, and let's hope there are many more gongs to come over the final few days of the champs.
Also, Claire, obviously we're going to have a couple of more pods coming up before Christmas.
Of course.
But Christmas, New Year, we will be having our highlights of the...
End of year review. Yeah.
So can we have mimosas again? What did we have last time?
We had mimosas.
Yeah, with Tom.
We can have mimosas with Tom.
We can have vodka if you want.
Gin. Gin is the drink of the year.
Yes, can we actually have G&Gs? Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. But could people start thinking about their favourite moments of the year? Now, it doesn't have to be gold medals at the World Championships. It doesn't have to be world records. It can be those stupid things that happened in a Diamond League that we all laughed about. It could be something that happened right around at the indoor season. But put your thinking caps on and let us know your favourite things. Have a think now. We'll announce probably next time somewhere official that you can let us know your favourite things of the year. And then we'll be reading them out at our end of year review.
Three, two, one.
We're the Southwark Park Volunteers. And you're listening to Backstreet Boys.
Well, I reckon that is about all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, as ever, for tuning in. We love that you all listen and that you get in touch, so please do keep the tweets coming. If you're thinking, hey, I'd love to tweet the Backstreet Boys and Girl, but I just don't know how to get in touch with them, well, I am at @Claire_G Thomas.
And we're at Backstreet B.
Very good. Yeah.
There was a beat there where I stopped and thought, is that... I jumped in without thinking. At Backstreet B.
We also have an Instagram account.
Oh, Backstreet Boys Podcast, I think. I was actually heading to Instagram as I said that to double check. But yeah, Backstreet Boys Podcast.
You'll find us. I'm sure you will. Thanks again for listening. Leave us a review. There are prizes for those that we read out on the pod, and we promise to do one next time.
So that's it for another Backstreet Boys. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back very soon. Bye.
Bye.